Welcome, everybody. My name is Frederick Badnott. Today, we're going to talk about fasting and answer your most important questions about fasting. On the line with me is Dr. Graham, a renowned expert on the subject of fasting and the author of several books and information products on health and nutrition, including the Perfect Health Program. I'm really excited about doing this interview because Dr. Graham is really one of the most qualified people in the world to be talking about fasting. He's been supervising fasts professionally for many, many years. He's had a fasting retreat in the Florida Keys that he ran for over 10 years. And since then, he's been supervising fasts in Costa Rica, where once a year, he takes a group of people and help them through the journey of fasting. So this is going to be very exciting. Dr. Graham, welcome.
Oh, thanks, Frederick. It's a joy to be here. I'm really looking forward to spending time with you.
We've had so many questions about fasting, and I'm really excited to have this opportunity to be able to answer all of them. But first, I would like to ask you a little bit more about fasting and to define what fasting really is.
Sure. Well, it's funny because there's a lot of ways to look at it and a lot of ways to answer that question. Different people, I think, would actually give you a different response, perhaps, than what I will. But if we start with a general overview, if we go to a dictionary talks about fasting as to abstain from. In other words, you fast from something by staying away from it. So if someone were to go on a water fast, for instance, it would mean that they could have anything they wanted except water. If they were on a juice fast, anything except juice. And yet that's exactly the opposite of the way we use the term in the health field. Now, people also use the word fast. Its roots are nautical, meaning that when you tie down a boat, you make fast, and what it means actually is that it's still going to be there when you get back. The boat's going to do the same thing again and again and again. It's just going to sit there at the dock. We have an understanding of this when we use the verb to fasten. And so fast and fasten are actually related to each other. The way I use the word fast, however, is slightly different yet again. And this term is relating it in more of a health field use. What we're using fast to equate with the word rest. And a great many of the questions that people have about fasting are automatically answered easily and obviously when people start to relate the word fasting with the word resting. So for the rest of today, I'm going to refer back to that concept and go, if we start looking at fasting as resting, fasting being a period of time where we get a chance to rejuvenate, to recover, to rebuild. We vector every function of the body back towards health when we take some rest. And typically what happens is the hectic pace of life takes so much out of us that we start to acquire, if you can in your mind allow me to use the phrase, acquire a deficit, we start to acquire a deficit of rest. We start falling behind and just plain living with it. Eventually, bodily functions are compromised and we become more toxic, we become more tired, we become less efficient, all of this leading us to lowered levels of health and vitality. And a fast is literally an adult-sized portion of rest.
That's a very good way to look at it, and I think this understanding will help many people answer their questions about fasting, because we hear so many different ideas about fasting and misconceptions too.
Fasting is a concentrated dose of resting, and the amount of recovery that we see happen during a fast is proportional to that concentrated dose of rest. We expect people, you know, go to bed with a headache because they're tired, and they wake up in the morning feeling better. You go into a fast and you come out 2 or 3 weeks later feeling, what is that? You know, 40 times better than what a good night's sleep would be. It's not a miracle. It's actually well within the laws of nature, but it is miraculous at how much better people get.
So what are some of the benefits of fasting that you've seen in your professional career?
Well, I think the biggest thing, Frederick, is that every cell of the body becomes more efficient and more effective at doing what it is designed to do. In other words, people's vitality improves. They look and feel younger. And so when it comes to specific health benefits, I really can say that in the last 25 years of supervising fast, that I've seen people come to me with I think almost everything, and seen it recover. Things from Parkinson's to multiple sclerosis to cancer and heart disease and arthritides and multiple personality disorders, addictive behaviors of all types have been addressed through fasting. I don't look at fasting per se as the panacea. I don't see it as the cure, really. The body does the healing, and the body is designed to heal itself from literally anything and everything. All we have to do is supply healthful conditions, and for most people who are demonstrating symptoms or having illnesses, for most people what they actually just need to do is take some rest. This is a huge portion of why people get well in hospitals. We often joke about, you know, the kind of care that people get in hospitals and drugs and doctors and all the unhealthy things that happen in hospitals and hospital food and whatnot. But people are taking a huge portion of rest when they go into a hospital. They lay down for several days on end. They have somebody else taking care of them, saying, look, don't worry about it. We've got it covered. You don't have to worry about a thing. And having that emotional rest and having that physical rest really makes enough of a difference so that in spite of the drugs and in spite of the hospital food, people are getting well. When we actually take all of the conditions and start stacking them in favor of health, we watch people get well at an amazing rate during a fast, and things recover. Fast is really well named because that's how quickly people get well.
In fact, one of the things I want to ask you later on is to give us perhaps some stories or from people you've known that you've supervised with fasting.
Sure, there's been amazing case histories, and I look forward to talking about them.
Great. So now I'd like to talk a little bit about the fasting retreat, because I know a lot of people have questions about it. Once a year, you do a fasting retreat in Costa Rica, and I know about it because I was one of the people who fasted with you last year, and it's been a great experience, and it totally transformed my direction in life, if you might say, for the year. It just really was a great start of the year. Now, you do this in January probably for a reason, because it's the start of the year. Could you give us some more information about the fasting retreat in Costa Rica? Why did you choose this place, and what exactly happens there for people who decide to come?
It's a joy to do this. It's something I very much love. I really look forward to this time, and I do it in January for two reasons. First of all, because I do call the program the New Year, New You Fast in Costa Rica, and it is a great time to start off the year as best as we possibly can. Give it our New Year's resolution to take good care of ourselves. So many people have this desire, and I understand how difficult it is. I've been, as I say, fasting people for 25 years, and the hardest day of the entire fast is the first day, because getting there takes tremendous decisions and a lot of heart-wrenching thought has to go into, oh gosh, can I get there? How do I get down there? Oh, how do I come up with the time? How do I get away? What happens to this? There's a lot of thought going into getting away for a few weeks. In this case, actually 6 weeks is a big chunk of time. And so I think really making the decision is perhaps the hardest part of the entire fast, because the fasting experience is a lovely one. Resting is not painful or difficult or uncomfortable. Resting is a wonderful activity. And a lot of times people think resting means doing nothing, but resting is an activity in and of itself. So and resting is not one that we have fear of. So I choose Costa Rica because it is so deep in our roots. Human beings are tropical creatures. We live in the tropics. We've never left the tropics. I know this sounds a little odd to people living up north or way down south, but the equator. But way up north, certainly this audience, and they go, well, I left the tropics ages ago. Never been to the tropics. Well, actually, you've never left the tropics. You just call your tropical environment a micro little tropical environment that you call clothing and bedding and heat, and you never leave the tropics. If you tried to sleep outside tonight on the street with no clothing, you'd be dead long before morning. You'd freeze to death. And so I go back to our roots, which is a warm, comfortable environment. I ran a fasting retreat in the Florida Keys for 10 years, as you mentioned. And when I share notes and compare notes with other fasting supervisors around the world, what I find is that when we take people with similar conditions and look at how long it takes for them to get well, they typically get well about 10 to 15% more quickly when they do it in a pleasant environment. And so I'm not picking on places, but if you're someplace up north and you want to fast in the woods up north in a cabin where you have to heat the air all day and breathe that dried air and can't go outside, can't even open a window, it's just too cold, or you're in a city environment, there's a lot of reasons why the environment in Costa Rica is just so perfect. We've got open air and bird sounds and spectacular mountain views. I've used this retreat many times in the past. It's one of the most beautiful, spectacular settings I've ever seen, and it's compact enough so that we can get around the entire place easily, but large enough, it's acres and acres of ground, so that we have our own privacy and literally won't hear a man-made sound for days on end. It's just a beautiful, beautiful place. And so having a temperature that is warm enough during the day so that we basically can be as natural as you would like, wear as little clothing as you wish, or as much as you wish, of course. But it's warm, it's comfortable, the windows are open, the doors are open, and it will not be cold. It will be blue, sunny skies every day. And lovely sleeping temperatures at night. We're up enough in the mountains so that wearing a blanket at night will, or using a blanket at night will certainly be indicated. To me, it's just ideal, perfect. The air is fresh and clean as it can possibly be. The food after the fast is the best tropical fare. But I also use this facility in Costa Rica in January simply to get out of the cold in the winter.
Yeah, I must agree. It makes sense.
The number of people that are health enthusiasts that say to me, oh, my skin gets bad in the winter. Oh, the food gets bad in the winter. Oh, what should I do? I get tired of being indoors all the time and the sun never shines. What should I do? Well, the thing to do is to get down to Costa Rica for a few weeks and shorten your winter dramatically by taking a break in the middle of it and say, okay, I've had enough of it. November and December was enough. By the time I get back, it'll almost be spring, and I'll be able to jump right into spring with newfound enthusiasm and newfound health and vitality.
It's the best place to do it. I totally agree with you. Just from my experience of going there last December, I left at the end of December to make it for January 1st. And when I left, it was snowing, of course, in Montreal. It was very cold. I got to Costa Rica. It was beautiful, sunny, and so combining this this tropical environment with the fast is perfect, but it's also a change of environment in general, being in a different country. So if you try to do it at home or even close to home, you know, you might want to call your family all the time, or watching the news or something like that. And when you're in that environment in Costa Rica, you don't have television. But could you describe a little bit, like, for people who perhaps are wondering, like, what does it look like exactly? Like, where do you sleep? How many people are there?
We're going to have almost 20 people at this location this year. There is a link on my website if people wish to see. There's a huge photo gallery of what the retreat itself looks like. But it's set up in the mountains. We have water running in our back garden, a good-sized river that is easily accessible. There's a large Watsu swimming pool. It means it's a shallow swimming pool and easily accessible. There's sleeping quarters for everyone in either private or semi-private rooms. I'm going to have 6 or 8 staff people helping me through this program this year, redundant amount of staff. We have the entire facility to ourselves. It's a spectacular vegan retreat center that, as I say, I've used many times in past to run events, and I know the owner very well. So the facilities themselves are set up primarily in ground floor cabins for the fasters. Staff will have upstairs housing or tent housing, and it's the architecture and everything of the place is really, really well done. It's done sort of with a southwest architectural design, but it's big and airy and open and well established facility that has been there for now for 8 years in its present form, but it's been there for a while before. It's set up near the Chiripo area of Costa Rica, which is one of its dormant volcanoes. So it's I don't know, to me it's one of the prettiest places. It's close enough to the city, about 45 minutes away is the nearest big town of about 100,000 people, so that we can have access to all the best food, easy access to the best of food when that part of the program occurs. But we run a very simple program. There's a presentation every single day. I will do a presentation every day down there, and this to me is a huge part of what fasting is about, because the idea of a fast for me is not just about rebuilding your health, but about learning how to live in such a way so that a fast isn't required again next year. And so when people try to fast on their own, one of the big problems is lack of guidance, that they simply don't make the lifestyle changes as a result of the fast without somebody teaching them how to do it and showing them how to do it, giving them reasons to do it. They don't make the lifestyle changes that allow them to become a different person than they were before the fast, and so they sink right back into the same problems they had previously. Of course, one of the biggest issues, although most fasts go perfectly uneventfully, is that fear is a huge part of every single fast. I've never met a person who didn't experience some degree of fear during a fast. And perhaps, Frederick, you'll even talk about yours, you know, and the things that happened with you in your fast. But having someone there who is qualified to determine, hey, is this perfectly normal? Is this worthy of watching closely? Is this worthy of concern? This sort of experience and guidance to me is invaluable during the length and breadth of a fast. Having a situation where you have people to care for you, to say, look, we'll take care of that for you, no worries. Sure, just give us your laundry, we'll take care of it. Yep, we'll change the sheets on the bed. All you have to do is go head out, lay in the hammock for a little while, go sit by the pool for a bit, come on back, and your room will be all taken care of. All you have to do is just take it easy. This is the difference. This is the stuff that makes a fast successful, as opposed to a fast that ended up unsuccessful. And I don't like to see people have unsuccessful experiences in their fast. I don't like to see people have unsuccessful experiences in their diet or in their fitness training. People tell me, oh yeah, I tried fitness training, but it didn't work for me. I kept getting hurt. And I go, well, maybe you didn't work it right. You really should never be getting hurt. You know, or people say the same thing with their food. Oh yeah, I tried that vegetarian thing or vegan or raw, but it didn't work. And I go, well, maybe you didn't work it right. And the same for fasting. I mean, lots and lots of, I can tell you lots of horror stories about fasting, but it's about people who tried to run fasts on their own, invariably people who tried to run fasts on their own or with improper guidance, and it ended up being a negative experience. We are so confident of our fasting experience down in Costa Rica. It's a guaranteed event. If you're not satisfied, it's a money-back guarantee. So the risk is really, we take the risk, but I couldn't go to a place that I feel happier about. Now, in terms of technology, it's a very low technology place. There are phone lines coming through theoretically this December, but in reality, we're not even sure that we're going to have phone line access. If we want phone, we'll go into town, as I say, 45 minutes away, which we'll do on a regular basis, but certainly not day in, day out. Can somebody call you? We isolate people completely. No telephone, no television, no computers. We're getting away. We're taking a rest. And the whole idea is to let nature do its course, and run its course. Oh yeah, we'll listen to music and we'll make some music, but entertainment is not really what this event is about. This event is about letting your body recover itself and regain its natural health and vitality. The health and vitality that we all had as youths, and there's no reason why we cannot continue to have that through our entire life.
It's fasting is really a unique experience, and like you mentioned, you come into it with different questions and apprehensions, and it's, for me, it's something I would never have been able to do on my own, and having that support with you and also the other people fasting and the people helping you supervise the fast was tremendous, and doing it in Costa Rica in that environment, all of that really helped make it successful for everybody. Now, I'd like to answer some of those questions that we've received, and we can go back and tie that in with the fasting retreat and give more information about the fasting retreat as we answer those questions. But there's so many questions we have, so I'd like
sure.
to... okay, great. I'd like to get started on that. And I know you mentioned at first that fasting equates with the word resting, but let's define a little bit more the kind of fast that we're talking about, because some people have heard juice fasting, or they're wondering, you know, if they can have a herbal tea or other types of beverages during the fast. Could you tell us a little bit more?
The fast that we're going to supervise here will be water fasting. I'm not against people doing other kinds of fasts if they wish, however they wish to do it elsewhere. The fast that we'll be utilizing will be water fasting, and I use water fasting for many reasons. First of all, I don't use juice fasting because I'm a advocate of the use of whole foods, and I think that if we're going to eat, we might as well eat whole foods. But also because when we're fasting, no one is looking for this experience to be longer than it has to be. In other words, efficient and effective. Let's get the job done in as short as possible. Take as long as necessary to get in the amount of detox and cleanse and vitalization that we're hoping to on this event, but no longer than necessary, so that we can spend more time re-alimenting, getting used to eating again, building back our physical powers, getting into the swing of living the lifestyle of healthy ways. And that is part of the fasting experience as well, as far as I'm concerned. The recovery time from a fast is as important or perhaps more important than the fast itself. And the number of people I've seen who have come to me with tremendous challenges in their health, and I go, well, what happened? How did this get started? And they go, well, I went to a fasting place, and I did a 19-day fast, and then I spent 2 more days recovering, and then I left because that was my 3 weeks. And I go, oh, and I hold my hands over my head because I don't know what to say to that. That to me, recovery is the hugest part. Learning the lifestyle that follows a fast is just huge. It's more important than the fast in many ways. And so, what will people experience? You know, they're going to do a lot of resting, Frederick. They're going to lay down a lot because they want to lay down. No one is forced to lay down, but they want to. And we're going to use water fasting. The water in the facility is absolutely spectacularly crystal clear mountain spring water, but we do also have a full facility filter system on that water. And so we're using local water. It is as good as it can get. And I have found that by doing water fasts and by supplying physical rest and physiologic rest, emotional rest, providing the kind of support, and then putting people in this environment that is just so spectacular where they can get sensory rest as well, no sirens, no horns, no alarms, that the fast can happen at its maximum pace. I've seen people heal broken bones in under 3 weeks that were full on breaks of the femur. I know a man 60 years old completely healed a broken leg in 3 weeks. I personally worked with a lady who broke her femur. She was 78 years old, and in 3 weeks later, she walked out of the facility on her own power. It was just spectacular to see this kind of rapid healing when the doctors had already said that they didn't expect her to heal in 8 weeks. She was bone healed in 3 weeks' time. It was, this kind of stuff is fast. And so using water fast for that purpose, I find, is just far more expedient. And then eating properly afterwards helps people generate the momentum to have healthy eating habits that they can take on and on wherever they go. Whereas the other types of fasting, I find just to be less efficient at doing that.
Exactly. I think before we go into the next question, I'd just like to clarify that a little bit, that it's your fasting retreat is not just about the fasting experience, which can take, let's say, 3 weeks for some people. So if you fast for 3 weeks in Costa Rica with Dr. Graham, you also have another 3 weeks to recover from the fast, which means you're going to start eating and learn how to eat properly so you can take home these good habits when you come back. But also during the fast and after the fast, there's a lecture almost every day, and for me it was the best part of the fast. I've done your other retreats and your other events, and they're all great, but I've never learned so much as I learned during the fasting retreat because of that concentrated dose. Every day we had a lecture for 6 weeks almost, and so you come back home with so much information and so much motivation, and it's like a new start.
Yeah, it definitely is a new start. It's a new lease on life, and you become a renewed person. And I agree with you, Frederick. The educational aspects of the program are as big as any other part. In now 25 years of doing this, I've learned a few things and listened to the feedback from the people that I've stayed in touch with over the years who've attended or come to fast, you know, prior. And so at this year's fast, I'm making it, I think, better than any program that we've ever run before. We're going to have, as I say, redundant amounts of staff people there who are functioning as interns, and we're still accepting interns, in fact. But people who wish to intern and learn more about fasting and learn more about health and physiology and how the body runs itself and spend their time in that kind of an environment, to have a staff of supportive people around you while you fast is just spectacular compared to trying to do something at home where everyone is telling you that you're doing the wrong thing, that you've gone crazy, why are you trying to kill yourself by starving to death, which is a very tough line to overcome. You know, to go to a place where the entire staff is totally supportive of you and is geared towards helping you have this experience, and they go, wow, I wish it was us fasting. You know, maybe next year we'll be here to fast, but this year we wanted to come and learn more about fasting. It's just such a beautiful thing to have this many people in one place all supporting each other. Having everyone come together as a group so that they do really say, go team, go, and knowing that, look, if you can make it one more day, I can make it one more day. I want to be really clear that no one fasts for a predetermined amount of time at my retreats. We fast one day at a time, tops. Sometimes only half a day at a time. You know, how are you doing now? Okay, are you good for another few hours? Yes, fine, I can go a little more. It's no big deal, I'm feeling fine, sure. Check with me again later in the afternoon kind of thing. No one goes in and says, well, I'm going to do a 21-day fast. It is not done that way. It's a one day at a time program, and we don't have a goal in mind other than the regaining of our health, not a goal in terms of number of days of fasting. And yes, no one is going to fast more than two-thirds of this event, one-third recovery time. That will be the outside limit. More typically, we'll be coming closer to half the time fasting and half the time recovering.
Let's talk a little bit about fasting on your own or fasting at home, because I know it's one of the biggest questions I've received. People were asking, you know, can you fast on your own, or what is the longest fast a person can take without supervision? Could you answer that?
Frederick, yeah, I can. You can fix your own car. It's possible. You can fix your own car. But if you take your car apart and then you realize that you don't know how to put it back together, it's more of a problem than if you had just brought it to the mechanic in the first place. And to do that in order to try to save a few dollars, I understand everybody wants to save a few dollars. I get this question every single day of my life. Well, wouldn't it be a lot less expensive if I just fasted on my own? Well, possibly in terms of dollars, it might be less expensive if you fast on your own, but in terms of your health, it'll probably be far more expensive. Because you're not going to get the guidance and the supervision, the chances are any fast that's done on your own is going to end in failure. People just, the fear levels or the pressure from family levels get so high that it almost invariably, easily 9 times out of 10 and maybe more, ends in failure, just utter dismal failure. And people were better off before they fasted, they often say, because one of the problems, you know, if you don't eat for 3 or 4 days or a week or more, when you finally do start eating, there's going to come a time where you become almost voraciously hungry, indiscriminately hungry. You'll eat anything. And if you don't have someone else to guide you in making the choices about the quality of the foods that you're about to eat or the quantity of the foods that you're about to eat, it's really easy to hurt yourself. And I see people do it all the time. They end up with far worse eating habits after the fast than they did before. You know, I would not be offering supervised fasts if I didn't think that fasting supervision was necessary. I have a specific reputation in this world that I choose to keep, and I'm not going to try to sell ice to Eskimos. And so, for me, I believe that fasting supervision is a real and valid skill, and it's a very necessary thing. You know, the world's best mountain climbers use guides to climb mountains, and the world's best business people use consultants for their business. Every top athlete has a coach. And if you want to be really, really professional in your approach to building your health, in this case, in fasting, it's smart to have a guide. It's smart to have somebody supervising who's been there before thousands of times, because to go someplace you've never been for the very first time and expect it to come out perfect, better than it does if you had supervision, I think is naive.
The main thing is you have no idea of what's going on. Like, you know, you've never done it before, you've never supervised fasts yourself, so you go into a fast and all these things happen, you know, and we're not talking about really negative things, like, but like things in your body you don't understand.
When you're fasting, you have a lot of time on your hands, and you notice things going on in your body that you might not even pay attention to when you're not fasting. You get a funny feeling on your arm, your stomach does a little ripple, you notice a shape or a dot or a spot or a feel or a lump or a bump, and you notice so much more about your body than you've ever had time or inclination to notice when you're busy going through your life. It's sort of the only thing there is to do, is to notice. And most people's noticing very quickly turns to fear. It builds up, it mounts. If you don't have someone there to bounce it off of. Now, I don't try to say that there's danger of death and you're going to, you know, it's hell and damnation and it's all going to be bad. But what I find is that most fasting situations where people don't have guidance end negatively, and they end negatively because of fear. It builds, and it builds quickly. But it also ends negatively because there's been no education provided, or not the proper education for people to be able to gain the answers to their specific questions and needs, so that they don't just go back to the old habits that they had before. And it's a fascinating thing to try to describe it from out here. You know, it's one of those things that there is a certain element of trust where we go, well, why is Doug Graham and Frederick Patnaud promoting fasting on, you know, this particular event with them in a way that, you know, why don't they just tell people just go fast? Well, you know, we're staking our reputation on this. And it's from our own experience that we know how important it is to have supervision. And I can't imagine me deciding to climb Mount Everest without having somebody to guide me. And let's face it, anybody thinking about going on a 10 or 20 or 30 day fast, it's equivalent to climbing Mount Everest. It's not a common thing that everybody does. It puts us in a percentile of people, if not one in a million people, have done this sort of thing. But we do remember that almost every great philosopher and every great religious leader in the history of the planet has done exactly this thing. You know, there is something special about it. And for us, what we're hoping to achieve, besides really special insight, is a level of health and vitality that is literally unknown to people who have not gone through a fast.
Let's talk a little bit about the dangers of fasting, or the concerns people have about fasting. I know we've had a lot of this question coming up in different ways. For example, people are wondering, you know, isn't it harmful or dangerous to fast more than 6 or 7 days? Or, you know, what does it do to your metabolism? Or could it create permanent damage to the body, you know, even with supervised fasting?
Mm-hmm. First of all, I think that the dangers of fasting are not only overstated, but misunderstood. Fasting is not starving. Starving is certainly not good for us, but fasting is not starving. When we're fasting, we're using bodily stored fuel to run the body, and we monitor people every single day for 50 different aspects of their health in order to make sure that they're not doing anything that could be even closely construed to being dangerous. The dangers in fasting, I think, really come in when people fast on their own. And I'm not kidding. The number of times I have been called up by people who said, look, my husband's on a fast, can you help him? And I go, well, I don't know, what's going on? And they go, well, he lost consciousness 3 days ago, and I'm getting really concerned. And that has actually happened on many, many occasions that I've gotten that phone call. Now, Most fasts go uneventfully. Most fasts are just the easiest thing in the world. But when they become event-filled, it's really a bad time to have to go find help and then try to bring that help up to speed so that they can get a sense of what's been going on for the last 2 or 3 weeks. I have seen people become hospitalized on a fast in as short as 60 hours of fasting, but there's no way to tell who that's going to be. I had in my 10 years of running a fasting retreat, I brought two people to the hospital and fortunately brought them both home. But neither one of those two people were patients of mine. Neither one of them had actually begun fasting with me. Both of them were so sick when they arrived to come to the fasting center that by the time I finished doing a history on them, I ended up having to take them over to the hospital because I wasn't ready to admit them in to begin a fast.
You wouldn't have let them fast.
Right, but they would have gone and fasted on their own if they couldn't come to me, and it could have been a disaster because one of them was having a complete renal failure. Their kidneys had stopped working completely. And if I hadn't picked it up, the guy just wanted to go fast. And so it's a fascinating world out there. I don't try to play up the danger. Certainly in terms of fasting for longer periods of time, no, there's no physiologic danger in that. The record for fasting is 367 days. I mean, we're talking about relatively short fasts compared to that. And that was medically supervised in hospital, 367 days. So,
pretty fat guy, probably.
Yeah, it's a big fat guy, no question, a big fat guy. But there was a rather famous nuclear physicist a few years ago who fasted for over 200 days. And again, he was relatively heavy when he started, and he was trying to make a political statement. But we see, I mean, there's countless records of people going on fasts in jails and fasts and fasts and health seekers of all kinds fasting for 30 and 40 days. This is relatively common, and to say more than 6 days or more than 8 days you're going to do some damage to yourself, this is unfounded.
And just to clarify also, just the statement you made a little earlier that fasting isn't starving, like starving, the starvation points that occurs during a fast or when people stop eating food, it happens like past like 50 days or 60 days because before that your body lives on its own body fat reserves, right?
Sure, it depends on how much reserves a person comes into the fast with, but you know, in terms of fat loss, we're typically losing about 2 pounds a week of fat, and that's what we're running off of, is those 2 pounds a week of fat, and that fuels the body to keep the heart functioning and the brain running and the liver doing what it does. And it, you know, at 2 pounds a week, it's a very rare person who doesn't have a few pounds that they can spare for such a thing. We're usually surprised that, you know, 2 pounds, yeah, I've got another 2 pounds. The danger to me, though, I think, is of fasting is not knowing when a situation is becoming dangerous or potentially dangerous, or not knowing what to do about it. And so this is why having objective, experienced, medically trained eyes and hands looking at the person each day rather than the person themselves, because a person's judgment is altered during a fast. The fact that they're burning fat in the absence of carbohydrates presents physiologic changes in our blood that has a negative effect on our ability to make clear judgment. And it works something like having alcohol running through your bloodstream. It changes your ability it affects your judgment in a way that you're not that aware of the fact that it has affected your judgment. And so having an outside person look in, I think, is the safety feature that it's huge. And I know, you know, where we started to tie that where we started to where we are back now. You know, people say, well, isn't there a less expensive way? Why do I have to spend all this money? And I go, You know, you can't go on holiday for this kind of money. You can't go to hospital for this kind of money. You can't get this amount of personal attention or guidance for the price we're talking about. And yet, for a few thousand dollars, we can literally get all of that and more, an experience that you will draw on for the rest of your life. It will give you an inner strength, knowing that you have fasted, that you will be able to draw on forever. For a price that to me, I mean, it's less expensive than any of the fasting retreats that I know of anywhere in the world.
Where you would go for 6 weeks and you wouldn't get the education, you wouldn't get the climate and all
that. You certainly wouldn't get the raw food diet at the end of the fast either.
Exactly, yeah. Just to mention a thing real quick before we go on to the next question, is that the kinds of problems that can happen during a fast can be caused by little things like people not drinking enough water or things like that that they wouldn't realize if they were trying to fast on their own. So having somebody to supervise your fast and, you know, monitoring everything and asking you how much did you drink today, you know, and all these things are super important for the success of a fast.
What a lot of people want to do is say, look, just tell me what I need to know and then I'll watch out for those things. The problem with that is that there are thousands of things to know and thousands of things to watch out for and countless, literally infinite possibilities and variations off of those themes. People say to me, well, look, I fasted before, so I'm just going to fast again. And actually, one of the worst experiences that I ever had in the world of fasting happened to one of my a person who had come to me to fast, and she fasted a relatively short fast. It was 14 days fasting, and then the next time that she wanted to fast, she was very stubborn, felt she knew it all, you know, and the next time she wanted to fast, she just fasted on her own. Well, only by chance did her gardener come into her house. Now, she told me later on that he never, ever had gone into her house in all the years that he'd been her gardener. But this time he chose for some reason to go into her house, and what he found was her lying on the living room floor in a coma. And so when she woke up from the coma, she was in the hospital and had been there for 3 days. And had no idea how long she'd been lying on the living room floor. Never could actually figure it out, but she guessed it was close to 3 days that she'd been on the living room floor. And only because somebody happened to come into her house and find her. And she wasn't far into the fast. She believed about 10 days into the fast when she blacked out. So the next time she fasted, I didn't find this whole story out. I never heard about this until she came to fast with me again about a year later. And said, look, I want to learn how to do it right this time. And she came and fasted a bit longer fast and did her 23-day fast and then did another 17 days of recovery with me. And at that point, the story eventually came out. But the danger is real. And she had fasted before, but none of the other fasts had she ever blacked out, or nor in the 23-day fast with me did she have any blackout experiences. It was just that once. There is literally no reason to expect that the next fast you take is going to be just like the last fast that you took. Each fast is a unique experience, and you have to be ready to deal with that reality.
You know, and we're not really talking about, like, dangers of fasting, but it's more like dangers of fasting when you don't know what you're doing, when you're fasting on your own, when you don't have supervision. It's really, that's the real danger of fasting, and it's important for people to realize that doing a fast on your own isn't a good idea.
I just simply don't recommend it. I understand that every night of the year we go to bed and we wake up and we have breakfast, and so we took a short fast on our own, and I'm not against a short fast. And sometimes if you wake up in the morning and your head hurts and you want to go back to bed until noon and extend your fast, I'm not against a short fast on your own. If you have the symptoms of a cold, or you're just feeling a little achy or extra tired or cranky or too much pressure, or your stomach is upset from yesterday and you want to fast for a day, certainly I would tell anybody that unless they have extreme some extreme health condition that really puts them out on the edge and they question whether or not they should fast, the fasting for a day or even two on your own is not outside the realm of safe and sound procedures, but to extend that fast on into a week or two, I simply cannot in good conscience recommend that anybody fast on their own more than a couple of days.
Let's talk a little bit about some other issues. For example, some people have blood sugar problems. Like, they tell me, okay, I have hypoglycemia, I'm pretty sure I will pass out after two days of fasting. What would you say to these people?
Well, again, each fast is done on an individual basis, and I can't say why or how people come to this conclusion. When it comes to each person is going to be handled in this fast on an individual basis. And when it comes to medications or when it comes to special care for a fast, I hope people can understand that when I take them through a fasting situation, that I'm putting them in a position where I'm trying to stack the cards in their favor. And so I've heard of lots of people who have blacked out during fasts. But then I find out what they were doing was they were also marching 15 miles each day during the fast, or running for half an hour, or doing exercises. And I go, well, let's go back to our basic premise. Fasting equates to resting. During the night, do you normally wake up every hour and do push-ups and help yourself get a good night's rest? No. When people are trying to exercise during a fast, this is absolutely contraindicated. And so my experience with blood sugar issues, certainly people who are not medicated or on heavy drugs for blood sugar issues, has been that blood sugar issues are not an issue of much concern. I have the technology with me. We can measure and monitor blood sugar as if needed. But as you experienced last year, in fact, no one needed blood sugar monitoring during the course of their fast. I have done it on enough people to be able to tell when this is necessary, but it's really far less common than many people would think. A tremendous number of the blood sugar problems that people have are because of the food they ate immediately before the fast. And, of course, that's something I control the last day or two before the fast. I have suggested diets for people to follow, and if they do so, then we go right into the fast. If they haven't, then we give them the last day or two's worth of food while they're there in Costa Rica with me. And we make this a much easier issue for people. But typically, if you are resting, then this idea of blacking out or having blood sugar problems during the first day or two of a fast is not a concern. It's only if you're trying to push to continue to do things that you shouldn't be doing.
I have a really good question here, and it's, when do you know it's a good time for you to fast? Like you said before, fasting could be your last resort, or you recommend living healthily instead of relying upon fasting. So how would a person know when to fast? Like, what are some of the possible signs?
The easiest way to know that it's appropriate for you to fast is if you don't feel like yourself anymore, if you don't have your normal vitality or your expected vitality, if you're starting to have symptoms or health decline, if you don't feel the enthusiasm for living and the joy and the quick smile that you know is you, anytime you're not yourself, I think you need more rest. It's the first thing I think, because I know in today's world we're just being pushed at so many levels. You know, we use electric lights automatically to extend the length of the day, where if we didn't have electricity, we'd be in the dark and in bed a lot, I mean, just so much more. And we just think of it as normal. Oh, yeah, I just use lights. But that's extending the day in ways that really isn't all that normal. And it pushes us. And what it pushes is our need for rest. And so the first thing I say to people, look, if you're not yourself, you need to rest more. And this equates with fasting. If you're not yourself in a bigger way, if you're starting to accumulate chronic symptoms, if you're starting to put up with conditions that are deteriorating rather than getting better of their own accord, it's time to fast. And, you know, each person, I guess, is willing to take as much compromise of their health as they're willing to take. I mean, this is a unique thing. But for me, I don't want to compromise my health. I don't like health decline. I really want to have my health as high levels as possible for as long as possible. Another easy way to know if it's time to fast, though, is if you don't have time for it, you probably need to fast. If your life is getting so fast and furious and hectic and filled that you go, fast, gosh, I could never take time off to fast. If that's your answer, then you probably need to fast far more than you realize you do.
It's funny because that's what you told me by email when I was asking you questions about the fasting retreat. You said if when you don't have time to fast, this is the right time to fast. And I really thought about this a lot, and because I was, you know, running this online business and just brainstorming new ideas all the time, and so I realized, yeah, I need that rest, you know, and I did it, and it was totally worth it, like in terms, you know, just to start my year, like in just professionally, even like just to take that time out, and then you're even more effective when you come back, like you have more energy, you're there.
It's a funny thing because I'm not taking 100 people on this fast. I'm really just taking 8 to 12 people on this fast. And we could take 100 people. We could use a different kind of facility. The level of care would be compromised for sure. But what would be compromised more would be my individual, personal relationship with each person before, during, and after this fasting experience. And I know that every person who comes to fast with me qualifies themselves. They want to make sure that I'm right for them and that this experience is going to be right for them. And we email back and forth quite a bit, and sometimes even phone back and forth quite a bit before anybody actually ends up coming down to Costa Rica with me. And they think that they're doing all the qualifying. But I'm doing just as much of the qualifying, to be quite honest. And I would say for probably every person who comes to Costa Rica, there are two or three people that I tell them, no, this is not the right event for you. Either you're too sick to come, and this trip is going to be either too risky for you or too hard on you or just not the appropriate place. Let me send you to go fast someplace where you're going to be right next door to the hospital, or where you're going to be close to your own hometown, or air travel is really going to be too hard on you. I don't think doing all that air travel is really in your best interest. I'm qualifying people, each and every one of them, to make sure that not only do our personalities fit, but that the situation that they're bringing to the fast is appropriate for this event. And it's just something that I feel is part of the level of professionalism, and why I keep the event very, very small is so that I can develop relationships with each person that comes, and I can give them the personal attention that they deserve, but they also want.
That's very good. I didn't know everything was going on, all that process was going on, but it certainly played a part because the group we had last year was amazing, like just the how well we got along together and having those people around and everything flowed smoothly. Now, I've got some more questions about fasting that we've received from our readers, and I think you've answered many of them through just by discussing the
different
facts.
Read the questions, and if we've already answered it, we'll kind of recap, and if not, we'll go on.
Okay, good. Well, one question was like about fasting on your own, like can I still function in day-to-day life, but you've really answered that.
Definitely not. Fasting and functioning are not to go hand in hand. Is it possible to do so? Well, yes, it is possible to do so, but if we look at fasting as resting, then we can say, okay, how much are you resting? If you're going on with your day-to-day life, what you've done is you've compromised the amount of rest that you're getting. And so rest becomes a relative term. When I take people down to fast, what I tend to do is put them into a situation where they experience complete, comprehensive, total rest, as much rest as they can possibly take. Granted, in the first couple days, it takes a little getting used to, and we ease you in over the first couple days, even the first week. We ease you into the idea of full-time resting. It's not a shock treatment, you know, but by the time you've been there a few days, you get better and better at resting, and after a week or so, you got the hang of really, really resting completely. But if instead what you're doing is fighting it, kicking and turning it every step of the way, and say, no, I want to walk my miles, and I want to do my email, and I want to still continue to go to work, but I'm just not going to eat. That's a different experience. Just not eating is completely different than fasting.
So you wouldn't get the same result.
It is possible to just not eat and go on about your business. But as you say, Frederick, you won't get the same results that you would from going through a fast.
Now, someone asked, like, to get used to fasting, for example, to be able to fast for 23 days, is it better if you get used to fasting first by doing shorter fasts or fasting one day a week?
Actually, there's really no value or benefit to be had from that. You don't adapt to fasting in that way. You're fasting every day of the year as it is right now by taking a break between whatever 8, 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night and sometime the next morning. Your body already knows exactly what to do. Your body already knows exactly what to do when you go through a fast because you've done it almost every single day of your entire life. And taking a one-day or two-day short fast here and there as preparation for a longer fast really is of no value whatsoever.
I'd like to ask you now about a question about enemas and colonics, and it's something that comes up so often. Like, people have done fasts before using enemas and colonics, and they haven't felt great doing it, or they still believe in their use. Like, would you discuss this topic, because I know it's a major issue for people?
I'm happy to discuss it briefly, and I know that the information that I give, sorry for the pun, but it very often ends up with a but kind of a response from people, because it is the information I'm putting out sometimes flies in the face of what you've heard in the past. However, the colon is a tube at the end of your digestive tract that is designed to handle the fecal matter that you're about to expel. What's in your colon all year round, every day, 24 hours a day, is fecal matter, and it's always there. That's what's designed to be in your colon. And your colon interacts with that fecal matter in a specific way. It absorbs water from the fecal matter so that your body can be very conservative with the amount of water that it needs, and the fecal matter is a little cleaner and easier to expel because it's just a soft mass rather than pushing out pure water. And that's what the colon is designed to absorb, is water. It is not designed to absorb toxins back in from the fecal matter that is there. Now, because there's always fecal matter in your intestine, or in your colon, certainly, there's always fecal matter in your colon, every day of your life, washing it out on any given day, to me, doesn't really make a lot of sense, because tomorrow there's going to be fecal matter in your colon again, and when you go back to eating, there's going to be fecal matter in your colon again. There's no more indicator that your body is going to absorb toxic matter during a fast from your colon than it would at any other time. And so either you're going to buy into this idea of daily washing your colon for the rest of your life, which I can't buy into, or simply not doing it at all. But we have to understand that if you're going to start washing out your colon, that you're going to wash out the good stuff as well as the bad. And what's the good stuff? The good stuff is the predominant mass of microbes and bacteria that are living in your colon that are necessary, that are essential to proper colon health. The microbes there that are positive for colon function outweigh those that are considered negative on a, by a factor of about 8 to 1. And when you do enemas or colonics, you wash out that good stuff as well as the bad. So I can't, first of all, recommend enemas or colonics for that reason. Now, during a fast, I would recommend them even far less. I can only imagine waking you up in the middle of a good night's sleep to tell you, okay, it's time for your enema.
That's the last thing. You know, when you're fasting, you don't really feel like doing enemas and colonics.
It's an incredibly stimulating experience to have an enema. I mean, it is a stimulant, and it irritates the system to some degree, and for a moment you feel awake and alive and alert, and you go, oh, I feel better. Well, no, you just feel a lot, but then you're going to feel so tired afterwards. And so watching car races, doing enemas, things that are just too stimulating during the fast is not what I'm recommending to have happen. I have never in 25 years had a single person show me a negative outcome for the fact that we have not used enemas and colonics during those 25 years. There has never been one person where we came to the conclusion that, wow, you know what, really should have a colonic in this case, or really should have an enema. That'll really benefit you. This problem won't clear up unless you have an enema. It's never happened once in 25 years. I won't put it beyond the possibility of happening ever in the future, but so far I've never seen a requirement or a need to give somebody a colonic during a fast.
You know, and if you combine that with the experience of other doctors, experts in fasting, such as Dr. Shelton, who supervised over 50,000 fasts, then never used colonics except in the big and enemas except in the very first years. It's just so obvious that it's not required by any.
We have a strong inbuilt training to intervene in some way rather than just let nature do what nature does, let nature run its course, and let nature. This lack of confidence in nature really flies in the face of what fasting is all about. I think we're far better to simply understand that every single day of our life, we've depended on nature to evacuate our bowels, and fortunately, nature's done a good job, and let's continue to do that. In terms of a full bowel education, I will give during the course of the fast people a bowel education that will, it'll probably be about 6 hours of bowel function education.
That was quite interesting, but you know, it's like the time we have for this discussion on health in during the fasting retreat allows us to go so far beyond than, you know, in any other programs that you run. So it's like going into all the details about fasting that everybody coming out of the fasting retreat practically becomes, you know, an expert in fasting, you know, compared to most people, not an expert that so that they could supervise fast, but you'll know more about fasting than almost anybody else you'll meet.
Yeah, you'll know more about fasting than almost anybody, including a lot of fasting supervisors, I've got to say, because literally every single day I will do a one-on-one consult with each and every faster. I will spend time with them personally at least once per day and sometimes twice per day and as much as necessary on any given day. And then each day I will do a two-hour presentation to the group of fasters and to the interns that are there as well. And so, you know, in 40 days you're going to get an 80-hour presentation on health. That's a pretty intense program. If I were to charge for that program, you know, it would be at least the cost of the fast in and of itself. But we find that people come out knowing a lot. Your personal questions will be answered. And then, of course, there's going to be half a dozen interns walking around who are all very knowledgeable in health themselves and are going to be willing and happy to share their knowledge. And anytime, well-trained to know that anytime they get to an area where they go, oh, that's out of my scope of knowledge, let me ask Dr. Graham and I'll get back to you on that one. So everybody's questions are going to be more than well answered.
My next question is about how to break the fast. Like, this is almost as important as the fast itself. Like, what is the best way to come off a fast?
This depends very much. The best way to come off a fast depends very much on the length of the fast itself. Certainly on short fasts like we do overnight, we don't think much about coming off the fast, although typically we understand that it's not the best move to have the heaviest foods first thing in the morning. We tend to start with lighter foods or juicy foods. So we carry this through to a greater extreme during a fast. And as the fast progresses from days into weeks, breaking the fast becomes a bit more of a critical concern. Certainly by the time a person has been 2 or 3 or even 4 weeks of fasting, breaking the fast becomes a much more extended and delicate operation that requires appropriate attention. Typically, I like to start, I use whole foods. I don't use juices. I know there are people who sometimes use juices to break fasts. I prefer to use whole foods, and I've found that to be a perfectly valid way to do it. It's certainly how Shelton did it as well, by the way. But it is a gradual thing. What we're trying to do is adapt a person back into the ability to utilize carbohydrates for fuel rather than using fat for fuel, and then to eventually get them to be able to handle the fiber that are in vegetables long before we start introducing any fatty foods, which may take a week or more before we introduce any fatty foods to a person after a fast. So they're starting out basically, they have a stomach that has shrunk down to the size of a walnut, and we want to expand that back out again and get people able to consume some volume. But it's a time in the life where a person is not at their absolute strongest, and we're not trying to add stress into their day. And so I use what I call a chirping bird theory, where people tell me, yes, I'd like to eat. And I say, fine, you tell me how often you wish to eat. I'll tell you how much volume you get to eat. And eventually, over a period of days, we build them back to the eating larger meals less frequently until they finally get back to the 3-meal-a-day program that we send them home on.
And
but it's got to be handled individually. Sorry to cut you off, Frederick. It's got to be handled individually. Some people really, after a fast, they go, oh, but I really, really, really want this. Could I have this? And I go, yes. Or I go, no. Depending on, you know, what it is that they're craving and what it is they're desiring and their personal history, and do I think that they're going to do well with that particular food? And sometimes go, well, maybe, let's see how you do with that. I try to be as open and listening to each individual as I possibly can, but I also am really, really watching what each person eats immediately after a fast.
I was just going to say that the food tastes so good after a fast, and it's a tremendous help to people to learn how to appreciate simple foods, because you go through that experience of fasting, and after that you'll have simple fruits and vegetables and a simple salad of tomatoes and lettuce. It's tremendously delicious compared to what you...
There's no way to describe how
there's,
good
there's just no way to describe
after fast.
And then so it's so much easier than to incorporate those good habits and to start eating a really good raw food diet after going through a fast. Now, I have another question which came up quite a bit, and it's about money. And how can you benefit from a fast if you cannot afford to go to a professional supervised fast such as the fasting retreat? Or, you know, the whole issue about money and low income and not being able to afford it. Like, what are there other possibilities, or what would be your answer for that?
This is a challenging thing for me, Frederick. I mean, in my world, I don't come from a poverty consciousness, but I am also not a rich, wealthy man. I have enough so that I can eat, and I have a very difficult time putting a value on my goods or my services. If I could run it all for free, I would, but I can't. The gentleman from whom I rent the facility wants money, and the people that transport us and the people who house us in the various hotels that we use besides the facility want money. And for the transfers that we take and then all the food that we provide, everybody wants money. And so this event is set up at a point where I can cover my costs and still be able to put a roof over my head in order to promote such an event, etc., at as low a cost as I feel I can possibly provide it. As I say, it is less expensive than certainly any of the fasting retreats in the United States. But if somebody wishes to have a shorter fasting experience, there are retreats in the United States that they can go to, where they could go for a week or they could go for 10 days and get an introduction experience that would cost them somewhat less. I know, for instance, there's a facility in Ohio that you can go that only costs the cost is about the same per week, but you also have to get at least $1,000 worth of blood work in order to go to that facility. And so the first week is going to cost well over $2,000. How do you beat the costs? Well, if you learn to live healthfully enough so that fasting isn't required, that would certainly be one way. And I mean, I do make a lot of materials available to people so that they can learn about healthful living. I mean, Frederick, you and I put together the Perfect Health Program with exactly this in mind. And if people would just follow the Perfect Health Program, there's a very good likelihood that they could live without ever having to fast. But for many people, you know, they're trying to overcome, how do you say, they're trying to dig themselves out of a hole. And so fasting is the most expedient way to get out of that situation. I really feel for people who don't have the finances to regain their own health. And I have done a tremendous amount of free work over my time. It's part of why we offer scholarships to almost every program that I run. And it's why I have interns come to the fasting program for people who say, look, I want to learn a ton more about fasting. I want to be in that environment. I want to have this 5, or in this case 6 weeks of support in my lifestyle, but I can't afford to go through the fast, but I could afford a third of that to come and help you at the event. And that's one way to certainly get a great amount of the experience. But those are, I guess, 3 or 4 different ways to make the best of it.
Thank you so much for your answer. I'd like to add something to that, because it's just coming from my experience, fasting is something I've wanted to do for so many years. Like, I learned about fasting 8 years ago. I remember I was looking at different fasting retreats, and back then I didn't have any money. And, you know, the thought of spending $6,000 to do a fast at this time was, like, unimaginable. But, you know, from what I know now, and having done the fast last year, and if I could go back to that time when I didn't have any money, I would have found a way. Like, if I could go back and just told myself, you know, Fred, you know, this is the time to do it. Just borrow the money, do something. I would have found a way. I know I would have found a way. But back then I was thinking, you know, there's no way I could possibly find that money. But also, during that period of time, you know, during these last, not these last few years, but these years when I didn't have the money, I also spent a lot of money on other trips, you know, going to different places and doing other things. So it's really a matter of priorities, I think, for a lot of people. But I just wanted to share that little bit of experience. And
I've had a lot of people, I appreciate that, Frederick, immensely. I've had a lot of people who have borrowed the money to come and fast. I've had a lot of people who have put it on their credit card to come and fast. I've had a lot of people who have set up payment plans to come and fast. I have never had anybody regret that they had done that. Most of the time when people don't have the money to fast, it's because they spent their money trying to get well on things that didn't work, rather than putting their money on the one thing that has been relied upon since time began by all mammals, that nature has shown us this is the way that we're supposed to regain our health. And, you know, I wish I could just give it to everybody, but I also know that the value of something that is given away is very often not as great as that something that you have to put a little effort behind to come up with it. I don't do that as a psychological game in any way. Like I said, I just have to cover the cost of the event itself. But I have never had anybody tell me that they didn't think that it was worth what they put into it. I know people that have even done programs where they did fundraisers in order to get sponsored to come and fast. I mean, there are always ways to come up with the money, and it's simply a matter of whether or not people look at the obstacles or they look at the goal.
It's like you said, it's something I cannot imagine somebody regretting going through that experience and learning so much and getting such a good start for the year. For myself, when I came back home, I was literally on fire, you know, with ideas for my business, and I was able to really like make that money back really fast. Like, and so it's just with that. With that clarity, because coming from a fast, like you, the kind of clarity you have, like the level of concentration you're able to attain, just the energy you have is so tremendous that you feel unstoppable for a while. It keeps going.
I'm reminded of a woman who came to fast with me, who is a television actress, and she called me up, and her problem was that she had chronic fatigue. And she said the chronic fatigue has been imposing on her ability to act to a point where she couldn't work a full week anymore, and she had gotten down to just working 3 days a week and living with it, and then down to 2 days a week and living with it. But now her chronic fatigue had so depleted her that she was only able to work a half a day out of an entire week, and now she could no longer make a living only working a half a day a week, and she wanted, you know, could she come in fast? Would it be helpful for her chronic fatigue? Which I assured her that, I mean, of all the things that, I mean, chronic fatigue is one of the fasting is going to be of the greatest benefit. And so after the fast, when she went back to working 5 days a week and taking the other 2 days because she felt she deserved them, not because she didn't have the energy to continue working even more, so quickly paid for the cost of her fast that, you know, she came back and said, gosh, you know, this was worth it 100 times over, because it just freed me up in a way that I never ever would have been able to do what I'm doing now had I not gone through this fasting experience.
Thank you so much for your answer. We're reaching a conclusion here, but there's something else I'd like to address. It's people have written about certain problems. For example, a specific medical problem, they would like to know if fasting can help for that, or if it's a good idea to fast with this condition or that condition.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to go into that, like on a public teleconference, but if people have specific questions, they can email me. I can forward it to Dr. Graham, and he will be able to answer those questions
Certainly every single person who wishes to come and fast is going to have to answer a few questions from me first. I want to know why they're coming to fast, and if they're coming to fast for something where fasting is inappropriate, or fasting isn't going to give them the results they desire, or fasting is contraindicated, or something else that makes me think that no, this isn't the event for you. You know, I'm going to tell you up front, I do not want anybody to have a negative experience on this event. We're going too far, and there's too few people. You know, there's for me not to be able to pick and choose who's going to be exactly right for this event. And so, yes, you qualify me, but I qualify you too.
Is it true that it might be the last year you're doing a fast in Costa Rica?
Every year might be the last year. There is no guarantee on this. I'm raising a family now, which is a new thing for me. As some of you may know, I have a little 7.5-month-old child, and my priorities have changed dramatically as a result of that experience. Rosie and I are both trying to put a great deal more of our attention into our writing and far less on touring and events. And And at this point, my Costa Rica commitments are simply just not what they were when I was a single man. And it is very possible that this will be the last. I'm making no guarantees that I'm committed in any way to doing this year after year. I know a lot of people come to me and say, oh, next year. And I go, I will share this little tidbit of information of all the people in the last 15 years who have said to me, I'll come next year. I can't come this year, but I'll come next year. Whether that was to my health and fitness week or whether it was to a raw nutritional science course and certainly to the fast as well. Of all the people that have said that, and there's been hundreds and hundreds, not one person has ever come next year. It has never once come to pass. They just put it off, and that's the end of it. If it's something you want to do, fine. If it's not something you want to do, fine. That I certainly accept that. But the living in the dream of I'll come next year, the someday I'll do this or someday I'll do that, someday I'll is a dreamland. It's not a reality. And for me, it's not that I care one way or the other, but if it's something that you think that you want to do, it's worth pursuing to find out if you do. If it's something that's going to benefit you to a point of changing your life, overcoming health issues, learning enough about health and healthful living so that you can go on and build your health in a way that is higher levels of vitality than you've ever imagined possible, then putting it off for another year doesn't serve you, because all you're going to do is, the whole possibility is going to sink further into the distance rather than coming any closer.
As a final conclusion, could you give us some a better overview of how people can actually sign up for the fasting retreat, how many people can actually join at this point, and how they can get in touch with you?
Sure, Frederick. On my website, Food and Sport, that's 10 letters, F-O-O-D-N as in Nathan, Food and Sport, foodandsport.com, on the very home page is information about fasting. You can go to foodandsport.com and look at your leisure at much fasting information as you want about the facility, my thoughts on fasting and why fasting at this particular location. The site itself will guide you right on through to registering for the fast itself should you choose to do so, or to email Dr. Graham to ask more questions. And so that part is all very easy. Obviously, I would recommend most people email me first if they have questions, or because space at this point is extremely limited, we're just accepting a couple of more people, and then the event is filled. Perhaps what a lot of people are doing is they just put down they reserve, commitment by putting down a small amount of money and say, okay, here's my commitment. I am gonna come to this event, and then I'll pay for it in full probably not much later in this month, but in December, pay for it in full.
What people can do actually is, since this is a private teleconference, I'm not sending this to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Only two people actually expressed interest in a fasting retreat, then they can email me directly, and then I can answer some questions, and then if they're interested to come, I can forward these people to you, and Dr. Graham will be able to answer all of your questions about fasting.
Yeah, I'm certainly happy to do it that way as well. Obviously, I will know from each person who comes. I mean, this is a small event. Nobody's going to hide. I'm going to know why they're there and how they got there, and we always like to track why people came and how you found out about the fast, and it's something that we always we feel is an important thing. But as far as finding out more about the event, certainly asking me or asking Frederick is I think the best way to find out more about the event, whether it's something that you wish to take part in the educational intern program. If that's something that you have interest in, then you can also email me. directly from the website and just say, look, I want to find out more about the intern program. Please tell me about that. I already have 5 interns of the 6 that I'm going to be taking, but I am still taking one more. And if it's something that you wish to do, I have a description of what happens in the intern program as well, which I'm happy to share with you, and then you can see if that's something that's for you. But for the fasters, if fasting has interested you, basically what I can tell you is that I have set up what I believe to be the ideal fasting situation. It's as good as I can figure out how to make it and still keep it at a cost that is reasonable. I will call it that. I think it is quite reasonable. It's certainly, as I say, as low as any of the facilities in the United States. And without it costing double or triple that, I think that what we've set up is the best fasting facility in the world is going to happen right here in Costa Rica, just 1,000 miles south of Miami, this winter. And if anybody wants to do it to experience what is an optimum fast in an optimum setting, I think that this group of people that I know is coming is going to be exactly that kind of an experience, and it just doesn't get better. If that's where your commitment is in health, is to go for the best, and it doesn't get better than this. If you want to bring your health to the level that you've always dreamed about, fasting is the ultimate rejuvenation. And if you want to go home in February looking 15 or 20 years younger than you arrived in January, fasting down in Costa Rica is the way to do it.
Thank you so much, Dr. Graham. This has been so interesting, and fasting is such a fascinating subject. I really appreciate your time today answering all of the questions. I think we've covered everything, and I'm really looking forward to hear from our listeners to answer their questions about fasting. And hopefully, I really hope that all the people really considering fasting can make it this year to Costa Rica.
Well, Frederick, I appreciate your support immensely. And if somebody comes up with another question or you think of something else that you think should be addressed, please know that you can call me back and add it on. Like I say, I look forward to seeing people looking and feeling their best. And if you have the potential within you to look and feel 15 or 20 years younger, well, I just want everybody to have that enthusiasm and vitality that I know that you and I share for ultimate perfect health. Thanks again, Frederick.
Thank you so much. Good night now.
Good night.